Well, let me hit the intro thing, and then we'll do the official intro and be good. All right, 3, 2, 1, go. So, hey everyone, officially welcome to the Digital Cash Rundown. It's episode, I believe, 139, which is a lot at this point. I'm joined by the one and only that I know of, Crypto Coronado. How's it going, man?
How we doing?
Doing fantastic. It's been a hectic publishing schedule today, and we're not done yet. But, you know, good thing there's few things I like better than crypto, and there's few things I like doing about crypto more than just talking about it. And guess what? Doing what I love. Great being here.
Yeah. I don't envy the position of producing content on multiple ecosystems, tokens, things going on. I think it was in 2020, I had a good friend who said, like, you know, if you're trying to keep up with everything going on in crypto, this year's the year it becomes impossible. Like All the egos, all the things going on, if anybody tries to tell you they know the general landscape, they don't, because there is simply too many things. So someone will ask me, have you heard about this latest ecosystem or thing or whatever? I'm like, man, I'm deep in ThorChain and Maya protocol, to maybe a larger extent Cosmos, but You can only tag so many bases. And really, I want to be like a domain expert in my niche and see how that applies to broader things. I really like the mindset of not pigeonholing our product or what I do in just like an in-group crypto thing for crypto degens. Like My goal, I say this often, but is like 10 million people with Bitcoin savings accounts on my platform, or having some kind of yield bearing position, whether that's with Dash or that's with Kujira, able to get their money out of the fiat system, be growing and sequestering value, and doing it in a way that's permissionless, non-custodial, no KYC, bringing it back to that versus like this ecosystem and that ecosystem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's for sure. It is crazy with the whole crypto thing, because a lot of us old timers get nostalgic because we remember when it was like just like a few people. And if there's someone with a crypto shirt, you'd be like, I bet I know that guy or know someone who knows that guy. And now it's so huge. And people used to be like, oh, your top 5, top 10 coin. And then it's like, now if you're on the second page of CoinMarketCap, like ThorChain was for a while, you could be one of the most revolutionary projects in the space. And people, it used to be the dead zone. And now it's just so much going on. And
anecdote, you know, we work full time in the space. How many of the top 50 market cap coins could you tell me exactly what they are? And yeah, I could get some of them for sure. 12, but probably
12 to 20.
Someone's gonna be like, have you heard of this? And I'm like, not even remotely familiar with what that is.
Yeah. And every time I check it, it's a different thing too. Yeah. It's just like, what is this crap kind of thing? And it's kind of funny because on a slight tangent on the Cosmos thing, I thought that with Cosmos too, because I did no research. I did not care. I was knee deep in other things. There was this little augmented reality game called Air Coins, or as I used to call it, the shitcoin vacuum, because it was like Pokemon Go for collecting random coins that you'll never see ever again. And Cosmos was on there for a little while. And I was like, So I thought of it as like some like 10th page CoinMarketCap kind of deal. And I kept seeing, I like, I don't know what it is. But then I start to see more and more projects having something to do with Cosmos. Like obviously, like so Zcash is thinking about becoming, you know, IBC compatible or whatever. Then of course you have ThorChain is the big one. And then, you know, my protocol also big. Dash Evolution, the Dash data platform that's hopefully going to be out, you know, any month now, is also based on Tendermint consensus and has a lot of like similarities with Cosmos. So like, it's just one of those surprising things. I was 95% focused on digital cash, and now I'm still like, I'm a solid 70% now, where now I'm like, Okay, digital cash, but then also like cross-chain, like, you know, into ThorChain and Maya, and then paying attention to like Chainflip and what was the other one? Sarai and some other, like, That's as far as like my, and then I just kind of know about other things that are not those two main groupings. And it's already hard to even keep up with all that, let me tell you.
Yeah, I mean, that's where as a cross-chain liquidity protocol and as a cross-chain DEX, Eldorado, my company, we take comfort in the fact that we aren't tied to the life or death of an ecosystem specifically, or, you know, an Arbitrum or a Phantom in the last one or whatever it is, because we, as a cross-chain DEX, we are straddling the meta narratives as they come and go. You know, our big integration in the last month was Kujira. Kujira is awesome. We're also not dedicating our whole product to just being about Kujira. We're looking for the next thing. It might be Caspa. It might be Cardano. It might be one of these other siloed ecosystems. And we're just looking to connect as many of these we think of it as a bunch of horizontal chains, and Maya protocol is a vertical layer connecting them in a similar way that Thorchain does the same thing with a different combination of chains. For those who aren't aware, the difference between Thorchain and Maya fundamentally is that they're going to offer a different menu of chains. They're not going to connect all the same ones. Maya and my front end, which is a front end for Maya, we will integrate Arbitrum. Thorchain is not and will not integrate Arbitrum. That's an enormous player to connect to cross-chain liquidity, direct BTC to Arbitrum swaps, things like that. So we're very excited about that. And it also allows us to, Thorchainer, they're our friends and they're our community and they're similar technology. And as long as people are using permissionless cross-chain technology, we are for it. It's really nice. We think of it as not competitive, but as collaborative. And we want people owning their own keys and performing cross-chain actions and transacting and storing value, whether it's Thorchain, Maya, our interface or other interfaces. We just see it as all win-win.
Yeah, it definitely is like a virtuous cycle and all that. Well, we should probably cap up the conversation with all this stuff. I got to hit the headline that justifies the existence for the podcast, because you have to have a headline that isn't just awesome talk about awesome things happening in the cross-chain space. So I don't know if you paid attention to this thing at all, the Bitcoin mining situation with ocean mining and stuff, where my quick recap on that would be Jack Dorsey and some other people have been pushing this new supposedly decentralized Bitcoin mining pool idea called Ocean Mining. Mostly headed up by Luke Dash Jr., who's one of the more controversial of the Bitcoin Core developers. And Seth for Privacy, great dude, I've had him on the show before, gave some interesting questions about, like, how does it work? And then he got blocked on Twitter, which is never a good sign. But basically, a lot of the controversy might seem to stem from the fact that this new Bitcoin mining pool idea will, or company, may start censoring, or maybe censoring the too targeted of a word, right? Too pointy of a word, but filtering out or not processing, not mining, ordinals transactions, which are like the NFTs on Bitcoin. And yeah, there's a whole lot of drama over that. So first off, do you, how much of that this situation did you know about?
A fair amount. I am aware of the ordinals, the general ordinals narrative, right? And actually a good friend of mine, Casey Rodemore, he told me at a dinner a couple of years ago, he was working on this idea, and he's basically the one who invented ordinals. And I actually saw him last week, and it's been, you know, I hadn't seen him since the whole thing has blown up, but, you know, for him, he's very much a utility focused builder and is trying to bring more utility to Bitcoin. And, like anything else, you invent a technology and you're not sure exactly who's going to use it or for what. But yeah, the ordinal explosion and then kind of the controversy has been really the more interesting Bitcoin development of the past 5 years, probably. And the decentralized purist view of it is let the market decide what it wants to use technology for, right? So the fear here and the concern with something like, you know, filtering out ordinals is centralized actors that nobody voted for and that the market did not get behind being able to call shots like that. So I see it as, I actually don't have strong feelings as to like how much it impacts transaction time and gas and like kind of the functional utility of BTC. It's more about centralized power players having too much say in networks like this that are not meant to have that. That'd be my high level. How about you?
Yeah, for sure. I would probably, agree with the thing. My history with Bitcoin goes back over 10 years at this point, and I've seen it kind of come and go, like the way it's kind of gone. And one thing's for sure, there has been a largely decentralized ecosystem that has had a very dominant, I guess, centralized growth on top of it, which has kind of pushed it in a certain direction. And thankfully, the alt scene, also known as literally the whole crypto space, has exploded as a result of people not being able to do everything they wanted to do on Bitcoin. And so in the end, the free market's great. Everyone's doing what they want. Everything's great. It does seem like, Bitcoin was supposed to be a peer-to-peer electronic cash system. And over time, that got morphed into like a settlement system where supposedly, or only the rich can do P2P on-chain and then everyone else has to do other things. It's kind of moved in that direction. It's always flirted with, it's still supposed to be money and payments. But it's also like, well, not every money or payments, just in these cases. And then we'll create specific data transaction things like with the SegWit block weight so that certain witness transactions and data transactions are prioritized or get a lower fee rate and things like that to try to encourage some data-like transactions. But only data-like transactions are related directly to payments somehow. It's kind of gone on this little line where, like, people and the market hasn't decided either way. And then when the market's like, what we will pay big money to put on Bitcoin is these monkey JPEGs, right? Return to monkey. And so as it kind of hit that way, but now the people who made that possible are not liking it and are trying to prevent it from happening. And it is an interesting spot right now because now it's not just, well, we have to constrict the block size so you can run a node. Now it's, we have to actively decide what transactions should and should not be on Bitcoin. And at that point, when you're starting to get to the, well, it's decentralized, but we should filter, we're at the breaking point of narratives is my point, right? Where people can't decide which side of the fence they're going to be on. And I think I like innovation. And one thing I like about the whole ordinals thing, which I personally don't care for the actual ordinals, I don't need one myself, but I like that it's pushing narratives to where it's forcing conclusions to arise, I guess, right? Where now we have to make up our mind on some things that we've been sort of flirting with on both sides for a while.
Yes, and something I insist on, I like to take the outside crypto perspective on many things. Mm-hmm. Always remember that still we're a bunch of in-group nerds focusing on a thing that only we love and understand and spend all of our time on. But mm-hmm. there's also the argument, is this an unnecessary degree of purity spiraling that is going yes. to hinder
the answer is yes, but go on. Adoption?
So for example, this whole Jack mining operation, to take it totally out of the context of Bitcoin, does that mm-hmm. bode well or not well for the adoption of cryptocurrencies? It bodes well. And to say for internal, like, purity spiraling reasons that it's wrong because it's not allowing ordinals and its ordinals are this mm-hmm. thing. If I tried to explain that to my dad, he would be like, who cares? It's probably a net good for Bitcoin for major players to get into mining. Yeah. So that's always an interesting question of how much is the purity of it hindering the popularization. Mm-hmm. And everyone agrees that centralized entities and forces and structures function well. They function very quickly because they're centralized, mm-hmm. right? It's kind of the authoritarianism of technology. So, yeah.
Oh, it seems to be a temporary little cutout there, but I'll cat yanks out the cable once in a while. It has been known to happen. Again, I'm assuming
more complicated than just an ordinals versus not. I think I lost you for a second.
Yeah, that's fine. Just it was a little like about 5 seconds of dead air, but that's fine.
I mean, I'm a maximalist for adoption, and ultimately, for example, this is dovetails well. Coinbase launched the best crypto ad I've ever seen today. It's on Twitter. It's a video ad about upgrading the system, about how broken the financial system is, and upgrade the system. And I am for that ad, and I'm for Coinbase. Do I support centralized exchanges? No. Do I think that's a good idea? No. I'm a decentralized cross-chain exchange. And if Coinbase is going to push crypto adoption, they're on my team. Now, I think that people will logically end up with the best options like ours versus a centralized exchange. But for the purposes of the grand narrative, that ad about the fiat system being broken, the fiat system, and decentralized alternatives, Bitcoin, all those things being the opt-out, is on my side. And if I was a purity spiraler, I would say I can't agree with anything Coinbase says because they're a big centralized exchange. And it's kind of like, I think somebody said to me recently, 80% my friend is not 20% my enemy, right? So it's, you know, we don't do KYC, we don't do these things that Coinbase does, but we are pulling in the same direction. And it's really, I try to recontextualize everything. It's ultimately crypto versus fiat. It's ultimately crypto versus the world, not this in-group squabbling which holds the space back.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And it kind of reminds me of the Binance situation of recent times. And there's a lot of nuance lost with that whole thing. One thing's for sure, CZ's probably cut some corners and done some things which could be considered shady in the building of his massive empire. But at the same time, how many people use Binance to onboard to Bitcoin and then other cryptos? Like, how many people, how much infrastructure, how many jobs, how many people were able to be paid in crypto and join all this because of this thing they built out? And so I wouldn't say maybe Binance isn't like an 80%, but it's still a net positive, I would say, right? A net, like, this grows the space. This has done a whole lot of great things. And same thing with, you know, Coinbase. I mean, how are people going to get their coins that they trade on Eldorado if it weren't for some sort of a centralized on-ramp that has to deal with the most annoying part of crypto, which is fiat?
Yes, well, we have on-ramp and off-ramp options that we are going to integrate, one of which is centralized, one of which is decentralized. Mm. It'll be very interesting. It's a Kujira-based project called localmoney.io, and they... it's a peer-to-peer marketplace. So we have some interesting solutions there. But yes, right now, when I want to cash my paycheck, Coinbase is the best one. And by extension, to their credit, here's another one. There's currently a program in Texas where you can borrow against your crypto and get a mortgage. There's that service that exists. That's a real thing. I wonder for myself, depending on where I live, if there were to be a product that allows me to take out a mortgage against my Bitcoin or any other asset, most likely Bitcoin, in the next 5 years, the highest probability entity that would be behind that or encouraging it would be Coinbase. And would I buy a house through Coinbase as a centralized entity who allows me to borrow against my crypto? Yeah. And I would be thankful for it. I'd be thankful that they're doing that. And yes, they are doing the messy business of having 1 foot in fiat and 1 foot in the Web3 world. So it's 80% my friend. And I really hope that especially in this next cycle, as mainstreamification becomes even more intense and hundreds of millions of people come into Web3, I really hope we can understand as builders in the space that you spite those that would win you the normies at your absolute peril, you know, yeah, like those absolutely. That win you the center, those that would win you boomers who want to put their savings somewhere or young people that just want to get in, trying to be too degen and in-group is not a positive sum and it's not going to grow the pie. So we really need to be focused on outreach. And I say to my guys with our design, with our marketing, hey, it's cool to get ThorChain people using Eldorado. It's cool to get Dash people or in-group crypto people. The person I'm most interested in is the person who makes their first wallet to use our platform. That's the money. That's new entrant into Web3. That's conversion versus adaptation, somebody who's already in. And that's our grand scheme is getting those people.
Yeah, and that reminds me, I was on a show a few hours ago, and they're asking about living on crypto and like who else lives on crypto and like why do people pick the coins they do? And honestly, a lot of people don't pick necessarily the best option available. They pick the thing that brings them to the dance, so to speak. So like if they got on board, they hear about Bitcoin, they get it, then they deal with the high fees and the annoying Lightning stuff and all that, just because that's how they can access freedom. That's the way they know. And same thing with like the Bitcoin Cash group. They do that too. And it's, well, they don't have the high fees and the Lightning. I'm not saying that, but they, like, that's the group that onboarded them. And so they're just using it that way. And like the inter-purity thing doesn't really affect a lot of, you know, those kinds of people. But it is kind of interesting how even the most rabid of maxis, for example, do tend to like the idea of a Bitcoin ETF and retweet it relentlessly, because mm-hmm. even though that goes against a lot of principles, it signals what they know, which is a lot more people are buying into this technology, and it benefits everyone to have new entrants into the space. And so the only thing I think that we just have to be careful about is to make sure that we're not furthering centralized custodial adoption where we could be furthering better, you know, non-custodial decentralized adoption. And it's a hard line to walk of like, how do you celebrate the Coinbases while getting people to prefer the Eldorados, you know?
Definitely. Sorry, I'm just moving closer to my charger. Definitely, and it really comes down to what are the options, and also it's another thing I say with our dev team and our designers and with things generally. Good technology is technology that works in the background, right? It's invisible mm-hmm. technology. You shouldn't know that you're using electricity. It should just work, or a semiconductor. But we need our financial rails, if we're going to create a parallel economy and a parallel system, to be seamless. And our cross-chain DEX of Eldorado should work with the ease and fluidity and function and UI UX of a Coinbase. Otherwise, it won't compete. It's cool that it works on the back end as a DEX, but I think our goal should be to compete one-to-one with, not only do we provide a better product, but the presentation is just as good or better. And we can do that, and we should aspire to do that. And again, not be something that's designed for people with technical degrees or years in the space, but for the average person to pick this up, understand how it works, and be able to use it. And if they want to learn that on the back end it is decentralized and that it's permissionless and non-custodial and a DEX, that's great. But it should work just as good as the competitor or better either way. And the whole non-custodial permissionless side of things can be in the background, but we need to compete one-to-one with the product and the service of a Coinbase or an FTX. And for us, you know, our platform, you know, cross-chain swaps, low fees. It's fast. It's easy. We're integrating charts. We want to have charts and visualizations of numbers and yields and things like that. But we consider our standard, not competing against other DEXs either. That's a limiting mindset. We need to be competing against the Coinbases. And then that is even limiting. We need to be competing against the bank, which the bank doesn't actually have great UI UX. But same principle holds. Like, this is about, where do you transact value? Where do you store value? Where do you grow value? And how seamless of a process is that to understand and engage with? And that is our aspiration with Eldorado. The whole like city of gold thing, we consider this building like a perfect thing that is the holy grail of crypto, a place where you can mm-hmm. come and transact in a sovereign way, no KYC, permissionless, non-custodial. We cannot access your money even if we tried. We don't have that in our... in our moral framework, but also it's cryptographically not possible. So that's just, I really think that contextualizing it as we need to compete one-to-one with these things is how we're going to think big enough to do something like overtake the larger DEXs and then the SEXs and then in the hockey stick version, the broader financial system.
Yeah, and it is kind of crazy to think, because we saw that happen with ThorChain, by the way. We saw streaming swaps as the one thing that finally lurches a giant chunk of volume over, where before it was like, well, it was pretty good volume, it's doing okay, but if you wanted to create a large trade, you'd create a large splash with it, and the price wouldn't be the best, and people would just, you know, they would have untold volumes of money on a centralized custodial platform is because the fees were better. And then as soon as that domino drops, now they're like, oh, this is great. And then they just start doing it. And I'm sure you've experienced this a lot with like the crypto boomers. Like, I wouldn't say I'm necessarily a DeFi native at all, because I kind of got into DeFi through ThorChain in like 2021 and like the ChaosNet days. But definitely more so than a lot of the Dash communities. Unfortunately, your support staff, I'm sure, has had to experience firsthand of like, why does it show this number, not that number? Why can't I want to press this. Why would I do like annoying maybe, but also just indicative of a group of people that of people who are by crypto terms relatively savvy, but then by DeFi terms, absolute noobs. And at least they know what a wallet is, what an address is, what a private key is. At least they know those things. And you still have that much education to support on that group. Imagine the person who has nothing, just doesn't know anything. Yeah. And that's going to be the fun challenge of the on-ramp.
Yeah, and it's so much a task of education. Removing ourselves and removing our biases and trying to meet our customers and our users where they are, things they're familiar with from the banking system, things like that. I am in favor personally, you know, this is getting into the technicals, but like in framing things as like providing liquidity and symmetric versus asymmetric liquidity positions. I think we should change that language. I think that's too technical. I think that savings positions or one asset, two asset instead of symmetrical, asymmetrical, just like little things where it's like, you got to make it easier for people. And if somebody comes to your site and doesn't understand how to use it and you blame them, you are not going to make your product better. So if they say this is complicated and confusing and you say they're right. As a free time thing, I teach dancing. I teach country swing dancing. And if your follow doesn't intuit the move that you want them to do, that's your fault. You did not lead that correctly. And you can say they're just not a good dancer in the case of crypto. They're just not technical enough. They just don't understand. And it's like, well, you didn't make it easy enough for them. And if the end goal was to get them to buy their first Satoshis and get out of the US dollar as it inflates away, you failed. And so you got to do better. And I think it takes some humility. It takes removing ourselves from our in-group and our biases of the crypto space and really just thinking like, I want to know my random cousin at Thanksgiving that wants to talk to me about crypto this year, but not last year. How do I get them on-ramped into Web3 with their first Satoshis, understanding how they can sustainably get yield somewhere in a way that is not inflationary and not a Ponzi scheme. And then also how to self-custody their funds and how to keep a file on your computer that is your wallet or something similar. So all those things are interesting. And I just see it as such a communication and education task and something to not take. It's not something to take lightly. It's actually the most important outside of your technology and your code actually functioning.
Yeah, I remember a friend of mine was a developer for the Dash username wallet, which has been kind of ready to go for a year or so, but is waiting on the underlying Evolution architecture to be released first. And as he's doing a UX design in Starbucks, and then he just pulled over some random lady who's there and says, hey, can you tell me like what is this? Like, what does it do? And she's like, oh, it looks like a Venmo, like a payment app. And it's like, okay, whew. Well, at least that worked out. Like, you know, we didn't have to say, you know, which is one thing that kind of annoys me a little bit about the whole understand Bitcoin meme. Yes, I do think it's very crucial to understand crypto at the very depth and breadth of everything at some point. But the whole thing about like everything that doesn't work for you is just because you don't understand it enough. Like, why am I paying these high fees? Well, you don't understand it. Or how do I do a new, why do I need to do a new channel for every time you don't understand it? Like, it's the absolute wrong way of doing things. And I sometimes I've hesitated too much to onboard people because the difficulty of getting them to understand things versus the not wanting to expose them necessarily to the price volatility of things that do work very well, very seamlessly. It's always mm-hmm. like a, you know, just got to make sure I do right by them and stuff. And in honestly, I've probably been a little too timid on that stuff and need to be a little bit more, you know, confident in getting out there and just also getting the feedback and passing it back. But yeah, I do think that we're at a point where we're very close. I think that this is these next 2 years are the early majority adoption years where mm-hmm. it won't be that weird to see someone paying with crypto or like, oh yeah, I know that guy, he uses crypto kind of thing where, you know, maybe not, it'll be like the first time you saw Apple Pay and stuff show up in stores where then every once in a while you'll see someone be like, oh look, there's another one, he paid. And it's not a lot of people still, but it's enough to where it's a chunk now.
Yeah. And these things that bridge the gap, whether it's like crypto-backed mortgages or credit cards, mm-hmm. those are going to be the early adopter kind of avenues. And I used to, as a thought experiment, I used to live in Austin, Texas, when I first started working full-time in crypto, specifically in 4chain. And I used to ask someone like, you know, dinner party conversation. I'd be like, just anecdotally, how long would it take me in Austin, Texas today for me to find someone who would sell me their house for Ethereum? My guess is a couple weeks. I could probably find someone in Austin in a week or two that would sell me their house for ETH if I offered them enough. That's a very tech savvy city. There's a lot of crypto people. It's a very prime environment, right? But take that and now scale out a trend for several years, right? Mm-hmm. At what point should you be able to transact for a car, a house? I think you're more the digital cash guy. I'm more on the store of value side and big purchases. So mm-hmm. houses, cars, long-term savings. It's not that I couldn't envision sort of the smaller transactions, paying for coffee, those sorts of things. But my greater interest and my greater like desire for my own personal mm-hmm. utility, I don't care as much if I can buy coffee or dinner with crypto. Mm-hmm. I care about buying a house. I also care about the pain in the butt of on and off ramping my salary and my net worth and my all those fun things.
Yeah. More finance start part of things.
Yeah.
And as I was also talking about earlier today on that other show about, I think that the digital cash world and then the digital finance world have been kind of like almost like Venn diagrams, but mostly not overlapping. That mostly like the DeFi people do all their finance stuff in the decentralized way, but just don't care on the day-to-day thing. Whereas the digital cash people care about spending it at the coffee shops and stuff, but they're not quite plugged into the DeFi where they still have their, you know, they either just are cash only or then they still have like fiat corollaries for savings and investments and things like mm-hmm. that. And the kind of the marriage of the two, where you have your finance and your cash all in this decentralized ecosystem, is kind of what I think people need to, it's like the network effect that pushes both. Because like, for example, if you have like if you're plugged into a DeFi ecosystem and can earn yield and swap any assets for whatever and get loans and all the other kind of stuff, and then just you swap one of your many tokens for the digital cash token in your wallet and then can just easily buy coffee or whatever with that, that's a lot easier of a jump than for someone like from nothing, right? They're already living the crypto finance life and then it's easy to do that way. Or if you're already using your crypto native as far as living on digital cash, it's a lot easier to just start being like, well, let me throw some of my digital cash in here to get some yield and some stuff like that and start mm-hmm. migrating into DeFi. And bizarrely almost, those two worlds have been very siloed in crypto. And I look forward to the next couple years when they start to get merged.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think, something I keep harping on, but sometimes sacrifices or compromises must be made in order to get someone with their first foot in the door. Mm-hmm. An example I like to use is NBA Top Shots. Remember that? NBA yeah, Top Shots. It's an NFT thing. It's NBA selling to basically sports bros, right? Basketball fans. I don't watch basketball. Mm-hmm. I don't care about that. it unintentionally got a bunch of people to interact with crypto for the first time. Hmm. That wasn't their goal. Their goal is to make money and promote the NBA. They use blockchain technology to do that. A bunch of people learned how to make wallets or on-ramp or do these things because of NBA Top Shots. And to them, thank you, right? You know, let's say Fortnite integrates some kind of like native like Bitcoin or stablecoin like system for NFT items or whatever. Is that going to be centralized and kind of normie based? Totally. Will millions of young people around the world interact with crypto for the first time? Also, yes. And that's a win. And I believe the best technology will win out. Hopefully they'll end up at somewhere like El Dorado, owning their keys, owning their crypto, getting, just to plug this, 14% APR on their Bitcoin, or the number for Dash is crazy right now. I think it's like,
I think it's in the 40. 50s.
Yeah. Today.
Yeah. For the APR, pool.
Yeah. The APR for Dash is 55.8%. Okay. But in any case, people will end up with the best technology. And I take almost an anti-purist and purity spiraling view, which is that, again, despite the people who would win the normies for you at your absolute peril, we need people making their first wallets. We need them getting their first Satoshis. The easiest conversion for me in terms of an El Dorado user is somebody who has some ETH or Bitcoin or something on Coinbase. And you need to help them learn. I think educate them sounds too harsh, but like you need to help them realize that they don't own that money. Coinbase owns that money, and that they can tell Coinbase to send them real money and send it to a real wallet. Yeah. Once you get that, you know, we're off to the races and you've really converted a user. And there are interesting ways to get that appeal. One of them is, hey, Coinbase doesn't have all the best assets. All, like all the cool, hot, new, trendy assets, they're not on Coinbase yet. And
all the hot, trendy assets are getting them sued by the SEC, know, which is...
Well, so is Coinbase, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like, that's the Coinbase, again, not a dunk on Coinbase, but a commentary on the sad reality of centralized services is it's an attack vector. And like if Maya, like if there's, if the Maya token itself, not Kakao, but the Maya token gets a trading pool somewhere, for example, and at that point, like if Coinbase wanted to do it, they're selling something that could get them in trouble potentially, right? Depending on, you know, definitions, who knows, but the, it, it's doesn't, you don't have to come with that, like, is the government going to sue the pants off of you, really, perspective when you're doing things in a decentralized way. There's depends on how decentralized you do it, but there's a, you know, usually you don't have to do that.
And also, I was talking about this with a friend earlier, but people ask me about my concern over legal liability or just the general regulatory state. I believe that we are in a waiting game against time. I truly believe this. 5 years from now, legislation, and it could, maybe contrary to some of your threads and stuff, and you're ringing the alarm on the bad things now, but in 5 years, I expect the world to be friendlier to my industry, not less friendly. And I believe that there are single-digit numbers, or maybe double-digit numbers, of key individuals in government and in bureaucracies who are physically trying to hold the door shut, right? And they're trying to hold technology and progress and the future back. And they have limited strength, they have limited terms in power and in office, and those people will lose. The Genslers of the world, the Elizabeth Warrens, those are not going to be the people that hold decades of power. There is a popular support going on for cryptocurrencies, decentralized technology, backlash against overregulation and overreach of the state in states all over the place, right? In Argentina, in El Salvador, all over the place. And so in the big picture, I'm like, well, no, this isn't about building a bunker that I do crypto from for 30 years in the desert in Arizona or something. This is actually more about me waiting out the regulatory environment, which is going to get better because it simply can't, it, they can't fight. There is no viable path to fighting. And so, yeah, at the end of the day, it's going to be a question of waiting against the clock. And these things are inevitable. I think if you look at any chart of adoption or number of wallets or dollars transaction, it transacted, it's all up and right. So the concern that this is like going to be an enduring shutdown, I simply don't believe it. I wrote a Twitter thread once about how I don't know, some fun facts. The IRS audits like 300,000 to 500,000 people a year. It pursues charges against 2,000 of them, and it convicts about 300. 300 people a year get convicted in, and I'm not talking about tax fraud, but just in general, the state's apparatus. 300 people a year actually get charges, convicted for tax evasion and things like that. And that's the IRS operating at max capacity. Somewhere between 20 and 30% of Americans have crypto wallets. Mm-hmm. That's just where we are now. Criminalizing or the ability, this literal bandwidth ability of the state to try to crack down on crypto at scale or ban its use or come after people for using it is, when you look at the numbers, you should be so bullish on crypto because it's impossible. There is no avenue to them enforcing this. They can barely enforce their own tax law, which involves, you know, auditing a tiny fraction of the population and then pursuing more. Like, the scale actually of enforcement is incomprehensibly hard. So everyone should take heart from that and know that they can't shut us all down. They really can't. There's already, and we're going to see another. We're just starting. Bitcoin's at 36K. We're in the beginning of the 2024 cycle. Hundreds of millions could come on. And so that's where we are. Yeah. And that's why I'm very unafraid.
Well, that's the thing. I'm kind of half and half, to be honest. Like, for one, I definitely think that the 5 years, I don't know if the 5 years is like, will be all smooth sailing, but I think within 5 years, we'll be through the worst of it for sure. I guess the what I would call the negative Nancy side is just be careful in the meantime, because I do think the next year or two or three maybe could be hard on some people, on some, you know, and it's kind of like there's two things I'm balancing, right? On the one hand, 2009 was not that long ago. And 2013, when I touched my first Bitcoin, metaphorically speaking, was also not that long ago. Before that moment, I thought I was going to live on fiat forever, kind of, and maybe stash some gold behind the fridge or whatever. And the fact that I've been living all on decentralized digital cash for, you know, 6-7 years now is pretty incredible to think about. So there's that. On the other hand, I'm close with Ross Ulbricht's mother, and, you know, Ross Ulbricht is doing a lot of the bold things that we do today, but, you know, he's not with us for probably the rest of his life as a result. You know, fingers crossed we can get him out. I've had Mark Risen Hopkins on the show before, and he went to prison for a while for simple P2P Bitcoin trading, and for without any idea that this could be even a risk. And my friend Ian Freeman just got put away for about 10 years for also this kind of thing. And at the same time, then you have things like Coinbase and Kraken and, of course, Binance and places like that that are actually getting a lot of wealth destroyed and a lot of headwinds in like a regulatory sense in the short term. And so I think that we should, and then, of course, the fiat world, right? You get financial censorship of people who, like the famous Canadian trucker protests and all that kind of stuff. And it's happening. And like, there's this window of headwinds that we're all in that we have to be prepared for and get through. And then it's the promised land. Then it's the land of riches, you know? So that's sometimes I think that, there are a group of people that will be harmed before full mass adoption happens if they don't start using tools to protect their sovereignty today. And that's the kind of people I'm sort of talking to and targeting are, you know, the people that I want to, you want to get everyone to be early as much as you can, I guess.
Yeah. And we're not going to get everyone on the ark. There's only so many lifeboats, but I want to help people as much as they can. For us too. And I love this about not having a token for Eldorado. We're a platform. We're picks and shovels. We have provided a place where you can go and transact permissionlessly, non-custodially, with very low fees. We're not saying buy our token. We're saying use the platform, see the truth in it, throw your Bitcoin in an LP with Kakao. Mm-hmm. I mean, Kakao jumped from 60 cents to 73 today. So, you know, DYOR.
I was too busy to even look at that, but that's great.
Yeah, DYOR NFA, but you know, this is what we're doing as a team. This is what we're trying to encourage people to do, is to understand the potential, both in the hard money of crypto, like something like Bitcoin, and there's also the more speculative ones that have utility, like Rune, like Kakao. And I always say to people personally, I will not tell you what to do with your money. I'll tell you what I'm doing with mine. Like, my money is in LPs with Kakao and Bitcoin and Kujira and stuff on Eldorado. And that's fine with anyone knowing that. They can do what they want.
It's a good bumper sticker. let me just flash the headline real quick about the Canada cracking down the stablecoin wrapped assets. Some friend of mine sent me this thing about, and this is, again, a push for urgency, not necessarily urgency, but push for people to decentralize their finances, that CoinSquare, for example, will be suspending support for deposits and purchases of wrapped Bitcoin and DAI in response to regulatory guidelines restricting crypto trading platforms from facilitating value-referenced crypto assets, commonly known as stablecoins, or I guess wrapped Bitcoin is a Bitcoin reference, so it's the same thing. And so again, if you want to stabilize your crypto and get back in and out or whatever, you should probably be using Maya and Thorchain and stuff. You should not be on a centralized exchange where they can want your best interest, but then the government says, or the bankers or whoever, shakes them out a little bit, and then they have to just cut off services to you. And so this kind of stuff is like, these are the headwinds we're hitting now, but thankfully the tools are there for us to not have to suffer from them today if we get educated.
Yeah, and I mean, it's knowledge is money here. Being early is about knowing about stuff and doing your own research, and then at some point having the confidence to get in and take a chance. And some people, I live in the real world. I have real friends, family. Most people are not in Web3. Web3 is my job.
Most of mine are fake.
And when I talk to those people, they say, isn't what you do risky? And I'm like, it's risky. Guess what? According to Trueflation, if you are an American spending US dollars, your purchasing power is down 25% since 2020 in 3 years. That's risky.
We've seen it. The last six months, we're down the
rabbit hole to Wonderland, Alice, and you need to run faster just to stay in one place. So I'm making plans. I'm trying to help other people. But ultimately, I like the phrase, the game is being played. You can play to win or play to lose, but you must play.
Of course.
So like the game of monetary economics, the game of your savings and your net worth, you can play to win or play to lose, but you must play. And playing to lose, or taking the kind of the forfeit route, is going to work in your job, throwing those USD in your bank account or in your 401k. That's kind of stasis. And that, to me, is risky.
Absolutely.
That's the risk I want to help people avoid.
Well, that segues perfectly into, check the time. It's shill o'clock. Let's hit on your shills. I'm just going to throw
all right.
The Eldorado site to start out with, and take it from there.
All right, so here's the deal. This is very simple. There is Thorchain and there's Maya Protocol. Both of them are cross-chain liquidities, enable cross-chain liquidity, swapping, yield, things like that. Thorchain combines a certain number of blockchains. Maya combines some of the same ones, but also its own novel selection. I like to think of it as a menu of blockchains. Maya has recently integrated the breakout ecosystem of Kujira. It will in the future be integrating Caspa, as well as Cardano, as well as Cosmos, as well as Arbitrum as a heavy hitter. So it's a mixture of both smaller up-and-coming L1s and L2s with larger, more legacy players like Arbitrum. Super bullish. All you need to know about that is that the underlying asset that makes all of Maya Protocol work in combining those blockchains is Kakao. Kakao is an amazing asset. It genuinely has utility because Maya Protocol does not work without it. It is to Maya Protocol what Rune is to Thorchain. Mm-hmm. Buy Rune if you want to invest in Thorchain, buy Kakao if you want to invest in Maya. Both of them enable these swaps and the yield to happen. They are necessary. They're not a governance token. They are part of the machine. So Rune and Kakao are my top picks in the world, other than maybe like Kujira and Bitcoin. Those are my four assets in the world that I care about. You can get Kakao with no KYC and with the lowest possible fees on the market. at eldorado.market. That is my platform. I am CEO. We are constantly building. Our goal is to get as many people as possible out of fiat and into the Web3 world. In addition, we want people seeing the potential and upside of both Rune and Gakao. You can get either of them permissionlessly in a non-custodial way directly to your wallet on eldorado.market. You can also LP them for some pretty impressive yields. And you can check those out at app.eldorado.market/stats. So we have some amazing yields there. I mean, we have currently 15.3% on Bitcoin, 29% on Ethereum. These are APRs, 20% on Kujira, 55.8% on Dash, 66% on USK, 76% on USDT. These are amazing yields. But don't just come for the yields, come for the swaps, come for the no KYC. If what you want to do is swap stables into Bitcoin or Bitcoin into Kujira and just hold it, we love that. It's your keys, it's your crypto. We can't take it even if we wanted to. It's impossible. It's a non-custodial platform. So we are trying to provide an environment where people can do that. And yeah, the way to get upside in that grander project of popularizing cross-chain tech and swaps is through Kakao and through Maya Protocol. We are aiming to be the primary and most popular, coziest UI Maya front end, and really build them out as both as a protocol and as an ecosystem. So we're extremely bullish on that. We consider Rune our friends. We consider other interfaces that offer Maya our friends because we are pulling in the same direction, popularizing the extinction of the centralized exchange and the rise of the decentralized exchange, and then the adoption by the mainstream. So eldorado.market, all the stuff is there. I don't have a token to show you. Just use our platform. It's a great thing. I use it every day. The easiest part of my job is that I think I'm the number one power user of Eldorado and Maya Protocol. So I'm using it every day. I just want other people into what I find cool and valuable. So
fantastic.
That is my shill.
Yeah. Come for the yield, stay for the freedom. Come for the city of gold, stay for the new world. Boom.
Yes, there we go. Love that. Right. Write that down. Bumper sticker that.
Follow the man on Twitter at CryptoCoronado. Go to eldorado.market. Get yourself into the new world. And yeah, we'll see you guys around. Bye-bye, guys. Happy Friday. See you around.
Thank you, Joel. Have a good one.